and welcome to another episode of the Burt's Books podcast. And this week, I have got a newbie on the podcast. Nikki, say hello.
Hi.
So Nikki is a member of every single book club that we have.
They're so good.
At the bookshop. You were also customer number two of the
I do believe I was first non-family member through the door.
First non-family member through the door.
And second to purchase a book.
What did you purchase when we opened? Do you
remember? Girl with the Loudening Voice.
Girl with the Loudening Voice. Wow. Was it good? Have you read it?
Yes, I did. Did you have it? I did. In fact, I brought it to the Christmas Eve book swap that very first year.
The Yola Bocca Flood.
That's, I can never say that. But yes, I brought it back to that. I really did enjoy it.
Okay.
Very good.
Do you remember, do you remember what the first book that we sold? So the book that was bought before you bought that?
No, but I know it was your niece.
It was my niece. It was Meryl.
Yes.
It was Oi Puppies.
Oh,
isn't that cute?
It is so adorable. Maybe you should get a framed copy somewhere. Yeah, first maybe. Book sold.
First book sold. Well, the first book sold, actually, here's the thing. We are coming up for 5 years of burtsbooks.co.uk.
Nice.
So that was the 19th of March, 2019. And the first book we sold, it was a subscription, which my sister bought.
Family loyalty.
So that was technically not the first book we sent out, but the first book we sold was part of the subscription. Would have been two books. Would have been Damien Barr's and Queenie by Candice Carty-Williams. So, and then the first book that was just bought was a John Mars book, The One. So there you go. There's a little bit of
nostalgia. Because we must be coming up to nearly 2 years now.
2 years in May.
May, yeah. I was talking about it earlier.
Yeah. So that's coming up. But we're not here to talk about the history of Burt's Books. I'm on a creaky chair, so I'm just going to move myself again. So I also must apologise to Michael, because last time I recorded a podcast with Sally and I mentioned the creaky chair and I blamed him. And he's very upset about being blamed.
It is not me.
He's very upset about being blamed. I mean, if you don't want to be blamed for breaking the chair, don't break the chair, right?
Definitely.
But, yeah, he said he got a lot of abuse in that episode. I said most of it was from Sally.
Well.
Probably.
Probably.
I don't remember abusing him any more than I normally do.
Well, that's quite a lot.
But, back to books.
Books.
What sort of things do you normally read?
My go-to comfort food would be crime.
Right,
I do like crime, and I do have to side with Michael on this one. I'm big Christie fan.
Okay. Does he know that? Have you spoken to him?
I think I have spoken to him once or twice about it, but we've not had a lot of time to chat about it. But I do. Christie's one of my go-tos. If I'm feeling a bit low and rubbish, that's what I would read.
What's your favourite Agatha Christie?
Oh, and then there were none.
Okay. So that won our World Cup of Christie.
I know. It was... I'm not surprised. Actually went to the theatre a couple of weeks ago to watch it again.
Nice.
So, yes. That's my absolute favourite Christie.
I read it after it won.
Oh, good, because you don't normally...
I haven't read many.
No, you usually moan about them.
I don't moan, I just moan that Michael reads them all the time, and like I wish he'd pick something new. I'm going to talk about it on a podcast with Michael at a future date, so I'm not going to say anything now.
You don't give away any spoilers.
Anything else? You're in every book club going in Swindon, right?
Well... feels like it. Just Burt's. I'm affiliated with Burt's. That's all I'm going to say. Part of the reason I come to the book clubs is to broaden my reading, you know, spectrum. I do tend to narrow it right down to crime, and I thought, no, need to widen that. Let's try something different. So I started originally in what we lovingly refer to as straight book club.
Straight book club.
And I enjoyed it so much. And then at the Christmas thing.
At the Yola Bocca Flood.
Yes, the one that I can't say.
You met Julianne.
I met Julianne.
Who's also been on this podcast.
She has.
I need to see if she'll come back and do a bit more with us.
I'm sure she will. But she inspired me through our conversation to come and join the LGBTQ book club.
Normal book club,
as we lovingly refer to that one. I've really, really enjoyed it. In fact... some of the books that I like to talk about most are come from that.
Oh, that's good.
Book club. Yeah.
So, actually, what we've got today is Sally and I have spoken about one called How to Bury Your Husband. So
if I had one of those, it would be very useful.
Well, that's why you don't, I'm assuming.
Yeah, probably.
So that's coming up later in the podcast. And I'm going to talk to you about Babel.
Yes, that was the book for Straight Book Club.
That was our Straight Book Club pick.
Which and I did not read.
You didn't read, but you attended the book club.
I did.
So I think it's going to be quite interesting chat because you'll remember things that I don't remember from the book club chat. And maybe I can answer a few questions that you might have that didn't get answered on the night.
Okay.
So we've got that and we've got How Not to Bury Your Husband or How to Bury Your Husband all coming up on the other side of this music. Let's start with Babel.
Perfect.
So this is the Straight Book Club pick.
Yes.
We haven't really delved into fantasy in Straight Book Club before.
And I think that was part of the reason why, hands up, did not read it.
Yeah, so why didn't you read it?
I was in a little bit of a reading funk, shall we say. I do read quite a lot, but I was in a bit of a dip. And when it came out and it was, it's fantasy, I was like, that's not going to pull me back in. Fantasy is not my...
Not your bag.
It's not really my genre. That and sci-fi don't usually... I don't mind skirting on the edges.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, no. And I knew from the offset that I read the synopsis and I was just like, I'm not sure this is for me. I'll wait and see if I perk up and I'll give it a go. But I didn't. However, that did not stop me from coming to book club.
No, and that was interesting. I think, so we've had people who go, I didn't read the book, so I'm not coming. I understand that. People who have not finished the book, so I'm not coming. Yeah. I understand that. They don't want spoilers. People who go, I hated the book, I'm not coming. I don't understand that.
No, I don't.
I think if you don't hate, if you hate the book, come and discuss
it.
Yeah, come and talk about it. Like, that's part of the fun. Like, if you didn't like the book, don't let it become a bad experience. No. Get something out of it by sort of venting or listening to what other people did appreciate about it, because you might find something in there that go, actually, no, I did like that style of writing.
We had that happened. If you remember, I was a huge fan of Under the Whispering Door.
Yeah.
And we came and I absolutely loved it. I think me and the two other people absolutely loved it and everyone else hated it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it.
No.
But it wasn't House in the Cerulean Sea for me. And I was disappointed in it, I think.
But it was nice to come and hear
different opinions. Yeah.
Because there's this thing where they say that we all read the same book, but we don't. Like, every book we read...
It's shaped by the reader.
Shaped by you and your experiences and how you interpret it.
Well, let me see if I can sell you on Babel. So I'll read the blurb.
Perfect.
Oxford, 1836, the city of dreaming spires. It is the centre of all knowledge and progress in the world. And at its heart is Babel, Oxford University's prestigious Royal Institution of Translation, the tower from which all the power of the empire flows. Orphaned in Canton and brought to England by a mysterious guardian, Robin Swift thought Babel a paradise, until it became a prison. But can a student stand against an empire?
Okay.
So, this starts off, as it suggests, with a young man in Canton. His mum has just died, and this benefactor, this white man, comes and whisks him away back to England. And he picks a new name, Robin Swift. Robin after Robin Hood, Swift after Jonathan Swift.
Nice.
And he grows up with the tutelage of Professor Lovell, and he's being primed to go to Oxford. He's only young, single-digit years when he's brought over. And what Lovell particularly values in Robin is he can speak Cantonese, and he values that because he wants to encourage that he keeps that, because in this world language is sort of magical.
Okay.
Basically, they take silver bars and they engrave on one side a word in English. And then on the other side, they might engrave the same word or the translation of that word in a different language.
Okay.
And the a native speaker of those languages can activate that silver bar by saying the words. And that then creates sort of a magical power. And the magic comes not in the words themselves, but in the gap in the translation. So, for instance, and I'm going to struggle to think of a specific one, but they talk about trains and steam trains. And there is a word that in English, it might have been, I guess, fast or safe or something. And so they use that on one side of the bar. But on the other side of the bar, they use a translation which into a different language, where the origin of that word actually doesn't just mean fast, it means safe.
Okay.
And so what is created by using these silver bars that has this translation on it is safe but fast travel on the trains. Okay. So it speeds up the trains, but it does it safely.
And that's what the magic is.
That's what the magic is.
Okay.
So, and that's as far as you need to go into, like, fantasy. It's actually not really a fantasy novel, I would say. It's a historical novel with a little bit of sort of magical...
Influence,
but it's not about the magic.
How historical? Like, what time frame would you sort of...
So, we're talking early Victorian era.
Okay.
And it feels like it is following the world that we had. So there's talk of opium dens in China, and there's talk of sort of the empire and the abolition of slavery,
so it's not...
and women's suffrage, and all of that is happening.
Yeah, so it's a realistic
world, it's
not...
set in our world, but with this little
with this
bit
difference.
Of magic. And interestingly, I don't know if I should say this, but it maybe is a little bit of a... It talks about bringing down an empire. It talks about bringing down the where Babel, where the power flows.
Yeah.
So you might be able to figure out where it's going,
where
the plot is going. It's set at a time at the height of the empire, and we know that after the Victorian era,
the empire started to dissipate.
And we had... So there's a question in my head is actually, was the proper empire, was the empire that we know, was it powered by these silver bars? Did Robin and his gang succeed in getting rid of them? Because we don't use them now. What I'm saying is that it's based in a reality that could become ours.
Yeah.
So we are now in a world where... what Robin did and what Babel did could have been true.
Yes.
It could have been what powered the empire.
Yeah.
It wasn't, but it could have been.
But it could have been. It's not too much beyond the realms of possibility.
Yeah. It talks about slavery. It talks about a cultural appropriation. It talks about a lot of things. And it's a very political novel in that way.
Do you think that was the author's aim?
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It was more, do you think almost like the story was kind of a slight sideline?
I don't know. So I nearly gave up on this, because the bit I was saying about where he's growing up and then he goes to Oxford and he meets everyone at Babel and he meets his new friends and or his cohort of people in his year, and that takes about 2/3 of the book, 3/5 of the book, something like that. And it's very, very slow.
I think that was quite a bit of a consensus.
It's quite densely written.
Yeah.
That stuff quite... I mean, some people loved it. Some people loved that stuff. I found it quite hard going. I didn't know where it was going in terms of plot. And I need to have some sort of idea as to
what's going on. The direction
of travel. Yeah. I don't need to know what happens. I just need to know... Look, okay, this is about solving a murder, or this is about getting my lost love back, or whatever. This Robin just felt sort of... he was just meandering through his life at this point, and no agency of his own. So I didn't know where it was going. Right. And then an incident happens, and it suddenly picks up, and you go with it, and okay, great, now there's a plot. So it felt like there was a lot of world building.
Yeah.
And then plot.
Do you think that world building was necessary, or could she have slimmed that down?
I was, when I was reading the last part, I was then trying to work out what would I have cut?
Yeah.
What would I have cut in order? And I think actually the last part was worthwhile because of what she built up.
Okay.
But I think maybe there was an element of, could she have built it up in a different way to have made it as engaging? So we cared about Robin and his friends.
Yeah.
Because we spent so blooming long getting to know them. That we ought to. We understood how Babel worked, which was important, because if you understand how Babel works, you can understand how it's brought down and also why they want to bring it down.
Yeah.
So I think it was all important. I don't know if maybe there could have been a different way of going about it. Some people said maybe a trilogy.
Yes.
I think that would have been a very dry first book.
Yeah. And if the first book's dry, how likely are you to pick up the second and third?
Exactly. So I don't know. I don't know if I would have changed anything. But I think when I recommend this book to people, I would be saying...
Persevere.
Like... If you're enjoying the writing style and you're... Because I enjoyed the writing style. But you're wondering about where this is going and is it going to pick up the pace? It will pick up the pace. But it takes a while.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I would go with that. The other thing I would talk about is footnotes.
I was just about to say, in the group they brought up a lot about the footnotes.
So there are a lot of footnotes in this book. And... at times it feels like the author is lecturing you.
Okay. I was going to say, do you feel the footnotes add something to the story or do they distract from it?
They distracted me. But I don't know if that's because stylistically, the way it's been put together, the way the font they've used.
Okay.
The asterisk that indicates the footnote is very small.
Yes.
So I would turn the page. I'd see immediately that there was a footnote on this page because you see at the bottom the actual footnote. And then I spent, before I carried on reading, I was like, where's the asterisk? Trying to work it out.
So fit it in.
Because it wouldn't have been something I'd notice as I was reading along.
No.
I've read other books with footnotes where they're a little number.
Yes.
And I would spot that. And so that it didn't bother me that I would miss them. So I found the footnotes a little distracting because of that. I thought the content of the footnotes was sometimes irrelevant.
Okay.
Like, there is one instance where the footnote was literally the... it's not just one instance, it happens a couple of times. But he talks about a word, and then he writes it as you would say it in Chinese.
Okay.
And then there's a little asterisk, and you look at the footnote, and the footnote is literally the Chinese characters. Which, for a non-Chinese reader, means absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Then there's a footnote probably three quarters of the way through where the author talks about footnotes in historical text and talks about patronising and condescending footnotes in these texts that almost sort of reframe everything in an English way, in a white way. And then that's when I thought,
the actual point of the footnotes?
That's what you're doing.
You're showing us.
You're making a point.
Yeah.
By doing these condescending, lecturing, irrelevant footnotes, because that's the way that white men have told your stories.
Yes.
So I found, I feel like this is a very clever book, but it might be a little bit too clever.
Yeah.
So it's
too clever for its own good.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this is what you wanted to make me feel.
Yeah.
I think some people would have just given up. I know some people didn't bother with the footnotes.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one. Were you sold on this when we discussed it?
When we discussed it, I will say you changed my mind a little bit. I thought maybe when I'm in the right frame of mind, I definitely think it is a book that you are going to have to be in that right frame of mind to read. But I thought maybe I'll get all your advice and read the first bit that I need, read some of the footnotes and read the last bit and miss out the middle. Because there was a woman at the group that lived in China, and she found the footnotes fascinating, and she thought, you know, it reminded her a lot of her life when she was there, and she found them very interesting. I think someone else said they found the information, some of it, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, some of the information was really interesting, because it was talking about the etymology of some words.
Yeah.
And it was like...
It's Susie Dentish.
Yeah, it was like watching Susie Dent on Countdown. Yeah. I liked it. I liked that sort of thing. but it wasn't relevant to the plot in that moment. And so you'd be interrupting a bit of plot for some quite dry information.
Yeah.
And I think that's also why the pacing didn't quite work for me.
Yeah, because I think when you're in, if you're involved in something and really getting into the story, you don't want to be pulled out of it by having to read this extra bit of information.
Yeah.
Do you think you could read the book and then go back and read the footnotes?
Yeah, possibly. I couldn't because I'd see the words on the page.
Yeah.
And need it. Other people have said that they listened to the audiobook of this.
Oh, yes.
And the footnotes were read out by somebody in a different
voice, a different person.
Yeah. So actually they found that the footnotes worked. They felt better on audio.
Oh, so maybe it's one of those books that you get occasionally that are better as an audio. Maybe. Maybe I'll be persuaded to try the audiobook version.
Well, why don't you try both? Why don't you read a bit?
Read a bit.
And then see if you can get on with reading it and then switch to the audio if you can't.
That sounds like a plan. Sounds like a challenge.
Sounds like a challenge, doesn't
sounds
it?
Like a challenge. Challenge accepted.
We've been talking about this for 15 minutes. So this is one of those books that I really struggled with.
Yeah.
But I found it quite rewarding in the end because of persevering.
Yeah.
I found there was a lot in this that I could talk about. And I learned a lot as well. And it made me think. And I liked the characters. So there's really nothing that I didn't like about this book. Apart from the pacing of the earlier bits. But I also understand why it was done that way. I think I ended up giving it a 3.5 out of 5 because actually, if it hadn't been for book club, I would have given up.
Yeah.
And I think
I'm glad I finished,
but you shouldn't have a book where 200 pages in, the reader is thinking, I need to give this up.
Yeah.
Because nothing's happened. Like, you need to indicate in some way, or you need to do something slightly different to keep the casual reader engaged.
Yeah.
Because I felt there wasn't really anything there.
No.
In that first 200 pages, apart from biography and world building.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure if you've desold me now.
Well, I think it's important.
I think it will,
for the last
I will
third
try.
Of the, I think yeah. The last half of the book valid. Is informed by the first half.
Yeah.
So I don't think you could just read the last half.
No.
But I think it's one of those where, do you know what? If you've got a morning, spend the morning reading that first half.
Yeah.
And then come back to it a week later or something. And maybe read something else in the in-between. And then come back to it and read the rest. That's Babel by R.F. Kuang. It is available at birdsbooks.co.uk. It's time for my favourite part of the week. And it's going to be a short one, I hope. Because it's quite late now as I'm doing this. Putting the podcast out a bit late because it's Mother's Day. So I've been out celebrating with my mum. So we're going to go straight into the charts and we're going to start at number 10 with the Nielsen BookScan charts, which are the charts that cover the whole of the UK. At number 10, we've got The Housemaid by Freida McFadden. That's down 6 places. At number 9, up 2 places. No, down 2 places. It's One Day by David Nichols. That is the regular edition that's down 2 places. Death in the Parish by Reverend Richard Coles is a new entry at 8. Last week's number 1, No One Saw a Thing by Andrea Mara is down to number 7. The Trial is at 6, that's down 3 places by Rob Rinder. Jay Kristoff, Empire of the Damned, that's the sequel in hardback to his Empire of the Vampire book which came out last year. That's up at 5. At 4, down 2 places, it's Homecoming by Kate Morton. At 3, Fate Inked in Blood, that's by Danielle Jensen. And at 2, it's Kristin Ciccarelli with The Crimson Moth. And then at 1, None of This is True by Lisa Jewell. Couple of quick notes. Obviously, this does exclude All the World Book Day books. And it does, I think, have at least 2 books which are going to disappear fairly quickly. Well, 3 books, maybe. So we've got the... we've got Fate Inked in Blood and we've got The Crimson Moth. Both of these, I think, look like the subscription books that we've talked about before, where they appear in a subscription and then just fall right back out of the charts again after the first week. Jay Kristoff, that one is a sequel, so it's not the first in a series, so I can understand why it's up so high. And I don't think that one would have been in a subscription box because it's a sequel. However, what we might find is that that one disappears fairly quickly as well, because it's part of this section of the market where the people who really like that series will pre-order the second one straight away. And so everyone who wants it will get it week one. And then it's a bit like Harry Potter. When that one came out, it was really high week one and then would fall down fairly quickly. I think we might see that with Empire of the Damned, but we might not. So that might stick around a little bit longer, but I suspect the other two will disappear fairly quickly. One other thing to note is that One Day combined would have been, let's have a quick look, that would have been number two this week. So yet again, just missing out on that top spot. I do question the logic of doing these film tie-ins, because they would be able to say a top two bestseller, number two in the market. But they can't quite do that now. It's one's number nine and one's not in the top ten. So yeah, they could be missing out on a number one, but they are not, at least not yet. Back next week, we'll have a look to see if that has changed. Sidebar, I know I said there was going to be a quick one, but Bookworm Bex was talking on Twitter a week or so ago about how wouldn't it be cool if the book industry did a chart, like the top 40 used to be on a Sunday afternoon, where you'd count down the top 40 books, have a little extract from one of them, maybe an interview with the author. Would people be interested in that? Let me know. I will maybe play around, maybe not a 3-hour episode like the charts used to be on a Sunday, but maybe there's a 1-hour episode that I could do like on a Wednesday evening that counts down the top 40 and does maybe a little reading or an extract from some of them, and maybe as we go get some of our author friends in to have a little chat with us about where their book has appeared. What do we think? Let me know. Contact us, Bert at bertsbooks.co.uk or at bertsbooks on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, etc. On to the Bert's Books Top 5, which we know is the most important chart of all. This one it was interesting, actually. So we've got one book that stayed in the top 5 this week, and that was Grave Expectations by Alice Bell. So that's the second week in the top 5 for that one. At number 4, it's The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman. Out of nowhere, that one's popped back into the top 5. Sometimes People Die, Simon Stevenson. Now, this is interesting. This was choice option number 2 on the General Fiction Book Club. And I put it in there as this was really good, I think everyone should read it. And quite a lot of people bought it, so people quite tempted by that one. At number 2, Rainbow Saurus, thanks to Steve Anthony, being in the shop this week. Part of World Book Day, he was signing copies of his book, and we had the paperback, so that's there. We can, I think, get the hardback soon. I think it's reprinting. In Memoriam, though, by Alice Wynne, is our General Fiction Book Club pick. It was my book of the year last year, and it's number 1 on the Pillar of Popularity this week. Will it still be there next week? Will the LGBT Book Club pick be there next week? There is only one way to find out, and that is by listening to the Bert's Books podcast. Go on then, Sally. What have you got for me to tell me about today?
I have got to tell you about this book, which is out in March. The Best Way to Bury Your Husband.
Okay.
Alexia Casale. I imagine if we have any female listeners, we're all sitting up a bit straighter now. Come on, girls. This is
awesome.
This is one for you.
Awesome gays.
Awesome gays.
You
yes,
never know.
Exactly. Yes.
So before you tell us anything more about this, somebody saw it on the blackboard that you were reading it and said, oh dear, things aren't good at Sally's house. things okay?
Things are very good at Sally's
Mr.
house.
Mr. Sally's all right?
Since this has been on the table.
I haven't seen Mr. Sally for a while.
No, Mr. Sally is very well, and I've had cups of tea aplenty, and the house is spotless, and yes, he's really behaving himself.
Go on then, tell us what it's about.
So, this is about
Hang on, get your glasses.
Yeah, get me glasses. I'm going to do the blurb.
Do you want me to get you the proper blurb up? Because that's we've just up. So behind the scenes peek. We've got a proof copy of this.
Just held it up to the camera.
Doesn't always have a blurb on it. There you go. There's the blurb.
Okay, so here's the blurb. Four new friends, four dead bodies, one big problem. Sally.
That's you.
That's me. Never meant to cave her husband's head in with a skillet. Or at least she didn't until suddenly she did. But Sally isn't the only woman in town being pushed to breaking point. When coincidence brings four strangers together, a surprising solidarity is formed. So, can they find the best way to bury their husbands and get away with it?
So then, Sally, tell me a bit more about your memoir.
This is... On the face of it, you would think, oh, really, it's one of those.
Another one. How to kill your husband. How to kill your family.
It's actually really heartbreaking.
Okay.
These first one is Sally. We meet Sally. Now, she talks to us about her granny's skillet and how she grew up. Her granny was her best friend and they would make Welsh cakes on this skillet. And her granny showed her how to prime it so it had the right patina and how to look after it. Now the skillet, she was bequeathed it.
Yeah.
Now the skillet is on Sally's kitchen side with her husband's blood dripping off it, and her husband is on the floor with his head caved in. And this is... That doesn't happen through no reason.
Right.
So it transpires Sally has had a very abusive marriage. She stayed in it for the sake of her children, who have now grown up and left. It's in lockdown.
Right.
And frankly, she's just...
Had enough.
Really had enough, yeah. And he's gone to put her arm under the... pour the boiling water out of the kettle on her arm again. And that's where the skillet comes in. And she just swings for him, quite frankly. So now she's left with a bit of a problem. She's got a body. Now, her first thought was, oh, I'll just go to the police. And, you know, it was self-defence. But then she thinks about it a bit too long and she's left it too late. And she's now thinking, actually, yeah, I've got to get rid of this body. So anyway, she does a bit of research. She doesn't research how to get rid of a body.
Google.
She goes, how do you dispose of a dead deer?
Right.
Run over a dead deer. And so it comes up with all this, all these hints and helps. I was talking to Michael earlier and I was going, honestly, I said, I can get rid of a body now. He said, it involves, I can't remember what he said, it involves a lime or something. And I was going, no, cat litter and tarpaulin.
Okay.
So the cat litter absorbs all the bodily fluids.
Yeah.
So she has this body wrapped up in tarpaulin. She's been to the hardware store. She notices another family, a young Indian girl with a smaller Indian girl with her, buying a trolley full of cat litter, a load of tarpaulin, masking tape, and in her trolley, Sally has put some sores because she's thinking, I'm going to have to do a bit of dismembering here. And she's thinking, oh. Well, they obviously have got a cat. They do not need this. Now we meet Samira. And she has... accidentally, on purpose, poisoned her husband, yes, and
Excellent.
Has a body to get rid of. And there are reasons for that. It's an Indian family. The older daughter, he is sending to after lockdown. She's going to India to be married.
Right.
He's going to get the money for her betrothal. And the wife doesn't want this to happen. So pops something in his tea.
So is this, so do we then get more and more dead bodies and dead husbands turning up?
We do. And there's one link. One of them is Sally's friend. We don't realise it's Sally's estranged friend. She's just referred to as a very, very tired lady with the new baby.
Right.
And how her husband is just horrible. And so he
gets done in.
He gets done in, but yes, she was very tired, and it was self-defence because he was coming. He would have hurt the baby because the baby wouldn't stop crying.
So we're on these women's side.
We really are.
Okay.
We really are, and they do. They come up with an enormously good plan, and it works. And
until it doesn't.
No.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely not. It works, and at this point in time, as the book finishes, they're home and dry. They've got away with it. But there is a twist.
Okay. Which you won't tell us about.
I won't tell you about. I will just mention Edwina, the elderly neighbour who is the patrol for lockdown comings and goings. And she is always in her front window twitching.
And she spotted people who don't have cats buying cat litter.
She spots quite a lot.
Okay.
She spots quite a lot.
Oh, interesting. That has. So I saw this come in and I thought it was going to be like How to Kill Your Family.
Yes. Yeah.
And, I mean, nothing against that.
No,
it was
no.
a good read. I enjoyed it. But is this not, is it not as comedic?
It's darkly comedic.
Right.
There are some dark moments. You think, oh, for goodness sake, blah, blah, blah. But what it is quite heartbreaking. It really. I thought the author must have been.
Must have killed somebody.
Yeah, or been in a domestic.
Oh, I see.
Or killed someone. Maybe she has a domestic violent scene. Apparently she hasn't, but part of her job, she works with women and children who are in that situation and have been taken away from that situation.
So it feels. So although there's fairly a sort of far fetched.
Yes.
Concept
yes.
of these four yes. women who
Absolutely.
Happen to all know
yes.
each other or
yeah.
each other have all killed their husband.
Yeah.
Actually, on individual merit, it feels quite real.
Yes, it does. And she says at the back, you know, on average, I think 3 women a week get killed by the person they know or live
yeah.
with. And in lockdown, that
went up.
Right up. And that was why.
Right,
was,
right.
Yes.
And does the lockdown element work? As now that we're 4 years beyond
oh,
however
it took
long
me
it
right back.
Yeah.
Lockdown wasn't good for a lot of people. I didn't enjoy lockdown at all. Not enough to get violent. But it was that you can go out for an hour.
Yeah.
And all that's in there. You can go out for an hour. And I immediately started to get agitated.
Get the flashbacks.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, yeah, the lockdown worked very well.
Because I'm always a bit sort of wary of going back to books that are,
yes.
that are set during lockdown.
Yeah.
But actually, Romantic Comedy by Curtis Sittenfeld. Did you read that?
I didn't, no, because
so,
you were rude about the Sally.
Oh, yes, I was. But that does it really well. That does
yes.
the sort of the
yeah.
lockdown element really well. Cause
I think there's only so many you can do with
yeah.
the lockdown element, and I think we need to start moving away from that now.
Yeah.
But this one worked really well.
And I think, for me, Romantic Comedy worked because it wasn't a story about lockdown. It was a story that was changed because
yes.
of lockdown.
Yes.
And I think.
And this is, I think, the same.
Yeah.
These women were cornered, if
yeah.
you like, because of lockdown and had to do something. Or didn't have to do something. They couldn't take any more.
So that's out on the 14th of March
yeah.
In hardback. So as we've discussed, that'll be this week.
That will be this week. That is out later this week
yeah.
in hardback.
Yeah, it's not January.
You can, it isn't. You can buy it.
Where?
At
Burt's Books.
Burt's Books.
Let's say it together.
Burt's Books.co.uk.
Or in the shop. Pop in.
Yeah, pop in.
So that is everything for this episode of the Burt's Books podcast. Thank you, Nikki, for joining me.
You're welcome.
And we've talked about Babel. We've talked about how not to bury your husband, or how to bury your husband. I keep getting that wrong.
Getting
I keep getting that wrong. So Sally's talked about that with me. And we've also looked at the charts and seen what the best-selling books were. This is the bit where neither of us really know what it was. I think, actually, I had a brief look. I think One Day has done very well. In not in the shop. I mean, it's done all right in the shop.
Yeah.
But it's...
Because of the Netflix series.
So it's been doing well for the last couple of weeks. I think it may have reached number one now. So we'll have a look at that. Oh, well, we've already had a look at that.
Yeah.
I will have a look at that in a couple of days. You've already... This is just so confusing now. And you are going to come back on another episode to talk about The Great Godden by Meg Rossoff, which we're actually going to record right now.
Yes. But we'll save it for another episode.
So there's a little teaser that's going to come at some point as well. If you I'm looking at the microphone now, yes. would like to be part of the Burt's Books podcast and want to take part and want to tell me about a book that you've read and want to listen to me wang on about a book that I've read, then do get in touch. You can email bert@bertsbooks.co.uk or find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of those things at Burt's Books. Those are also the places to just get in contact if you have any questions, want to buy a book, want to tell me a story, you know, anything. If you just get in touch, tell me how much you love the podcast. Do
we
that.
We love the podcast.
I do like that when people say that. And we had somebody in the shop today who will be listening to this at some point.
Yes.
Keith, who came in and he wanted to talk to me about A Little Life. So we spent 15 minutes talking about A Little Life.
Only 15?
Well, yeah, we both had things to do. we talked about that. We talked about a few other books. I sold him quite a few books.
Nice.
It's always nice.
Always bonus.
I think he went back off to Oxfordshire, weighed down with a few books, and had ordered a few books as well. Hopefully some that I'm going to be talking about on the podcast soon. So one of the books he ordered was the new A.J. West.
Oh, yes.
The Betrayal of Thomas True. And I do have a proof copy of that, and it is very near the top of my reading pile. I've got a few that I have to read.
Yes.
And then that one is next. So
it would be nice, interesting to see after The Spirit Engineer.
Yes, I think so.
Yes, see where it goes.
See where it goes. So that's all coming up in future podcasts.
Can't wait.
How exciting. Please do remember to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. That way you will never miss an episode and you will know exactly what Nikki thinks of The Great Gordon. You will know exactly what I think of The Betrayal of Thomas True and what Michael, Sally, whoever else, like Reverend Rachel is going to come on one.
Exciting.
You know, I'm going to drag all sorts of people into the podcast. So, you'll find out exactly who I drag in and what they think of books coming up on future episodes. But that really, really is everything now. I think I've said it all. All that's left for me is for me to say goodbye. And Nikki, say goodbye, Nikki.
Goodbye, Nikki.